It's a tragic and sad accident. I really feel for the families on the plane, on the helicopter. It's, you know, these accidents are all often very complicated, a set of things that happen sequentially. It's often not one thing that causes a major aviation accident like this. I've been involved in accident investigations, particularly like with Space Shuttle Columbia, you know, as an example that we lost in 2003. And to say that it has to do with the person's color of their skin or their gender, I think that's just poor leadership. And especially at a time where any president is supposed to be the consoler in chief.
So Senator Mark Kelly reacting to the plane crash. It's been like a wild weekend of stories. We've got two plane crashes here that we've had to deal with. A lot of transportation issues. Is the president supposed to be the consoler in chief? I don't know if that's exactly in the job description. You would like to see leadership. You would like to see competence, and you would like to see action when action needs to be taken, if reform needs to be made. And we're watching to see how this story unfolds, because it was such a tragic, tragic catastrophe. We wanted to bring our friend Representative Eric Burleson on the show with us. Of course, he is Missouri's 7th Congressional District Representative. He's also a member of the House Oversight Committee, a member of the Freedom Caucus, but also a member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Congressman, thank you for the time today. It's an honor to have you on the show with us.
It's an honor to be on, Annie.
Thank you so much. I want to give you the opportunity to react to these two plane crashes that they're very different situations, but the proximity of them, they kind of become part of the same story. And also Senator Kelly's criticism there of President Trump's reaction.
Yeah, I don't know that I can comment about the second plane crash because we don't really have many details. But look, his response is really telling of where the Democratic Party has been and where they continue to be. They're just very obtuse to the reality. And that is, Trump was not saying that this was caused by a DEI hire. What he was saying is that this is an agency that, just like all the other federal agencies, they're so focused on DEI, that's their number one mission, that they've lost sight of their core, or, you know, has been mentioned, like in the business world, their hedgehog, which is hiring talented individuals, right? If you're the FAA, you want the most talented, brightest people, regardless of their race, their gender, their disability, whatever. You want the most talented people, but instead they're chasing after quotas and they're focused on DEI. And as a result, we have a shortage in air traffic controllers. We have, you know, people that may not be as qualified as some of the other candidates that got the position. And that's what Trump is trying to make the point of. This is not about, you know, as Kelly wants it to be, is saying that people of a particular, you know, who are DEI hires are the ones that are responsible. That's not at all what he's saying. He's saying we have a decayed system. We have a broken system. Sorry if I'm on a rant here, Annie.
Yeah, go on.
If you go back to FEMA, when we had the disaster that happened in the disaster and FEMA's trying to clean it up, and you had that big scandal, well, guess what? They had to come in front of Congress and apologize. And their number one priority was not hiring competent people. It's hiring based on DEI. When we had the Secret Service allow, for the first time in decades, someone to take a shot at the president of the United States, and everyone was wondering, how in the world could this possibly happen? Guess what? Their number one priority was DEI. That was the number one mission statement for that agency. And so I think that Trump is onto something. And there was a documentary that was done by The Blaze just in November talking about how DEI has crippled the FAA's ability to hire competent air traffic controllers. And sadly, 2 months later, this happens.
Yeah, it's very sad all around. I know that, like, as soon as the word DEI gets entered into a tragedy, then a lot of times the political story will take over kind of the humanity of the story from time to time. You know, my heart goes out to all the people who lost loved ones in, whether they were in the Black Hawk helicopter or in the American airline jet. It just happened, but is there fault that is assessed? Do we know where the breakdown happened to cause this accident?
I think it's too early to know exactly where the breakdown happened, but one of the early signs is that you had one air traffic controller doing the work of what would normally be two. That's an example of us not having enough people on staff to do the job. You know, one of the evaluations I would like to see happen is to let's evaluate the software system that they're using. I understand that it's very old and arcane technology, and you know, evaluate that. Let's look at some things. For example, AI. Where could AI have stepped in and helped some of this to help stop some of this from happening?
We're speaking with Congressman Eric Burleson, Missouri's 7th Congressional District Representative. I've never flown into Reagan National. I've flown out of that airport. I didn't realize how small it was after all the reports. We were finding out like how short the runways are, how busy it is. Is there going to be any change to the traffic that comes in and out of that airport, or is that a non-starter?
I'm pretty sure it's a non-starter. It's the one airport that every member of Congress uses to get in and out. It is a very popular airport. And also, you know, if anything, there's more demand at that airport. So It's got increasing demand, increasing volume. I think that the question we ought to be asking is, can we not operate in the same space here? Can the FAA not figure out a way in which the military can run exercises with their helicopters and at the same time not crash into a plane?
Yeah, that's a good place to start as well. I'm reading from a report here from earlier in January where you, along with several of your colleagues there in the House of Representatives, are looking to dismantle the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. And I know that, you know, people look at these tragedies here and they think maybe more regulation is needed. And we've seen a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans, and certainly President Trump talk about less. The DOGE effort, I remember them saying, would we have like 420-something agencies? He was saying he thinks he can get it down to 99. You're calling on abolishing the ATF. What would come of that? What would be the fallout and the benefit of removing the ATF from its existence here?
Yeah, I love this question because, you know, being a former state lawmaker, one of the first things you recognize is that the Missouri statutes overlap almost completely with federal firearm laws. And the people that are actually enforcing the laws are your rank and file, like sheriff and in a sheriff's office, your local police office, your highway patrol. They're the ones that are actually enforcing both the federal and the state laws. But what ends up happening is the ATF will draft some kind of new rule to that they've decided. There's no elected officials. So, for example, the pistol brace rule, that was entirely done by unelected bureaucrats in the ATF. And as the result of that is that then the ATF can come in and commandeer your local sheriff, your local police chief and highway patrol to start rounding up pistol braces, which is not about keeping people safe. It's about making things terrifying and making criminals out of law-abiding gun owners. So this is an agency that doesn't really, when the rubber meets the road, help us be safe. If anything, they're going after our Second Amendment rights.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, I live in Illinois, live across the river, come to Missouri 5 days a week to do this show. So I'm in Missouri right now. But it means a whole different thing to be a firearm owner in the state of Illinois versus Missouri. If you abolish the ATF, does that change at all the state's rights to manage the laws, how they restrict and control and regulate law-abiding citizens' ability to own and operate a firearm?
Yeah, that's a great question. At the end of the day, it wouldn't change much because your local law enforcement, your state, Missouri and Illinois both have laws on the books pertaining to how people should handle firearms, purchase them, all of that. So at the end of the day, the ATF is a duplicative agency. Not only do they overlap your state and local government, but they overlap a lot of federal agencies as well. By abolishing the ATF, you're not eliminating the laws per se. I have another bill that does that. But if the laws were in place, the FBI or U.S. Marshals Service, some other agency could step in and do that if they decided. But At the end of the day, it's a duplicative agency. And look back at the history of this agency. It is responsible for some of the most embarrassing moments in U.S. history. You had Ruby Ridge that was started by the ATF trying to actually entrap an individual to get him to saw off a shotgun. They ended up raiding his property and killing half of his family. You had the, you know, Fast and Furious incident. You had the event in Waco. All of these were done by the geniuses at the ATF. And then just recently we had an event in Arkansas this last year where a community leader, the head of one of the at the local airport, was purchasing too many guns according to their new rule change, and they went in and raided his home, shot him in the head, and he was completely unarmed. So this is the kind of stuff that the ATF does and why they continue to be an embarrassment.
Representative Burleson, this is Ryan Wiggins. I'm reading a lot about agencies like USAID being maybe eliminated, but also kind of moved under the State Department. Is that what you're talking about with the ATF, is maybe not eliminating it entirely, but moving it under a different department? Or do you actually want to completely eliminate this thing?
In large part, I want to eliminate and gut their responsibilities, because a lot of it can be done and should be done at the state and local level. So I don't think we want federal agents coming in and commandeering our local law enforcement and telling them what their new priorities are when it comes to keeping people safe. Our local sheriff, your local police chief, they all know what's best for your community, and they don't need to have a federal bureaucrat changing those priorities for them. Now, I'm excited about, you know, the effort to eliminate the USAID program. This is a black program. It's shovels out billions and billions of dollars. Most of it is CIA slush fund stuff. And a lot of the money goes to things that are just, for example, the Wuhan gain of function stuff was funded through USAID. Anytime you see something that's really questionable, it's usually going through that program.
We're speaking with Congressman Eric Burleson, representing Missouri's 7th Congressional District. Before we let you go, I see you're a member of the House Oversight Committee. I think that a lot of what I want to make sure still happens is that we look into the mismanagement of relationships, of taxpayer dollars coming out of the Biden administration, going into the Trump administration, of course. I'm wondering what you consider, in your experience with the House Oversight Committee, this iteration, where is their focus, and how many, I mean, I guess you're going to have to carry multiple focuses at one time, but what should we expect to see from the House Oversight in these 2 years?
I think that the number one priority really is the DOGE effort. So oversight dovetails very well with the effort that Elon Musk is doing. And so I'm on the DOGE subcommittee. Marjorie Taylor Greene is the chairwoman of that committee. And you're going to see, for example, I'm on a text thread. We're planning some of the upcoming hearings. One of the hearings will be about all of the waste and mismanagement that the NGOs were doing, especially in helping to exacerbate the immigration process. So that will be probably one of our very first hearings. We'll probably have a hearing about some of the wasted programs like in PBS and NPR. I think it's long past overdue that we are still subsidizing someone that basically competes with you, right? Like, this is a federally funded agency. We would scoff at the idea. We scoff at that federally funded or government funded speech in other countries and talk about it being government speech. And yet we do it here in America. And because we have Big Bird, it's hard to eliminate these programs. But at the end of the day, I think that they would survive just fine on their own and should survive. But we'll have hearings on that, along with a lot of the waste that happens in Medicaid. There's a lot of fraud in Medicaid, and that's where a lot of money that is wasted, as well as a lot of money that was wasted in COVID. And some of the PPP loans and other things we'll be investigating.
You know, what I'd like to see is no taxpayer dollars, like the Hyde Amendment says, going to any facility that provides abortion, whether or not Planned Parenthood says that they use those dollars on abortion. Let's take what we have been giving Planned Parenthood and let's give it to, as a Republican-led effort, adoptive services across the country. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that.
I love that too. I think that our family donates to pregnancy care centers because we just understand the need for that. And it's, I think it's more as a Christian, I'm a Christian. I think that I have an individual responsibility to care for the people in need. And I think that, I think they do a much better job with those dollars than a government, funneling it through a government program.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Congressman Burleson, for being here with us today. I know there's going to be plenty to talk about in the weeks to come, so come back soon. We'd love to have you.
We'd love to be back. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you very much. Congressman Eric Burleson, the 7th Congressional District representative in the state of Missouri. He's got a lot of hats in Congress, and it's always fun to have them, especially if you're watching on the YouTube channel. He was on Zoom with us, so that was a face-to-face conversation. I love that. We're going to take a quick break. More Annie Fry Show right around the corner. I didn't watch the Grammys. Did you watch the Grammys?
No. I hate them.
This is one of those things that, like, if you were given a list of things to talk about today and you were just trying to snap through everything, Grammys would be the top of the list.
Yeah.
Did less than 5% of our audience watch the Grammys last night?
It exists in headlines after the Grammys. That's the only way that people are consuming that.
Because of the people who did something to try to make a headline.
Yes. Well, like, and Jimmy Carter.
It's kind of like your Wendy's story.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter, that man don't quit. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.